every Thursday and Saturday.
Aishinor grew up on the Salish Sea, where her parents raised her in her adopted country. She was born across the ocean in the land of Turkey, and the path that brought her up to that September day took her to Standing Rock and to the Seattle streets, and eventually to Palestine, where she would meet activists from everywhere gathered at the scene, where she'd become number 17.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, while the news is fresh, yesterday Israel attacked Lebanon. That's hardly news. Israel has been bombing there for nearly a year and much else besides for decades more. But what is new is the nature of the attack. Everyone's heard by now of the pager bombs. As I write, 11 are confirmed dead, with many hundreds more injured. After nearly a year of horrors and crimes we've never witnessed, it seems we've got further to descend yet. But David Rovics is not cowed. He says, whatever's happening next, I aim to sing about it. David's an itinerant singer, songwriter, essayist, and anarchist. Fresh from the anticlimactic Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Rovics and partner in musical rhymes Kamala the Good Emmanuel, a.k.a. the Ministry of Culture, are touring the continental Northwest with gigs in Washington State, Oregon, and right up here in B.C. Welcome back to the program, David.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be with you. Actually, the tour in the Northwest is actually on my own, and Kamala joins me for the Europe wing of the tour in November.
Well, David, before getting to Lebanon's exploding communication devices, you've been writing like crazy as usual. You memorialize in song another fresh war crime, the targeted killing of American peace activist Aishinor Ezgi-Egi. Who was Aishinor?
So Aishinor, and that was in Beita in the West Bank outside of Nablus. And Aishinor was the, depending on when you start counting the dead, I mean, in 2021, the Israeli settlers started building a new settlement, expanded settlement outside of Beita, this Palestinian town. So people started protesting against the Israeli land theft going on. And in that first round of protests in 2021, I think 7 people were killed and by the Israeli snipers. And since then, there's been just, more killed until now. Aishinor was the 17th and the one that got all the publicity because she was not Palestinian.
And from the ISM, us with long memories might recall Rachel Corrie.
Yeah, Rachel Corrie and Tom Herndahl were both killed, in the line of defending Palestinians in 2003 and 2004. And Aishinor is now the third American activist from the ISM, I guess. Tom wasn't American. Anyway, it's the third.
Tom Herndahl, he was English. England, and he got hit in the head, if I remember, by one of these jet-propelled canisters, like tear gas canister kind of ideas. Or
that sounds right. I know other people have been hit those things and crippled for life. They can be deadly.
And we can't forget the Turkish American killed on the Mavi Marmara, the ship that was sent in to break the siege of Gaza by siege, taking in aid and so forth in 2010, that a friend of the show, Kevin Nisch, from right here in Victoria, was on board.
That's right. And if people come hear my show in Victoria later this month, then they'll have a chance to meet Kevin if they haven't met Kevin yet before. And it's entirely possible that if Kevin hadn't been present at the right time and place and stood up and made his presence as a very pale foreigner known, there would have been more people killed. It was looking very much like that.
And we might not have seen the photos because Kevin took his, the chip out of his camera and stuck it down his underwear and secreted it in various places while he was held in jail so that it was never found. And then he retrieved it, and there was photographs of what had happened that night. And I think he might even had some video on that, you know, the memory card, whatever they're called in mm-hmm. these devices. Heroic stuff. Well, there was less heroism today, at least from Canada, at the United Nations, where there was a vote. And I was looking at your Twitter site just before we came on air. And you put a posting up here, but there was a motion at in the UN General Assembly, and Canada bravely abstained voting on the motion that Israel honor past motions from that body and vacate the West Bank and Gaza. By next year, this was the strength of this motion, which really. Beggars belief sometimes, but that they get out by next year.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a great idea. It's a great motion. And of course, the Palestinians are the one that put the motion forward, and it has a lot of detail to it, which is, in terms of like how they should actually withdraw and all that. You know, I mean, it's interesting. But it says so much that the vast majority of the world's countries, in terms of numbers, as well as the vast majority over the world's population, represented by the countries, is in favor of this resolution, just as, most of the world countries voted in the first place for calling the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza illegal back when I was baby.
Well, maybe I'm being overly cynical and saying the resolution is weak. It just sounds funny to me that, and we'll give you a year, there's not really a sense of urgency in that.
A bit arbitrary. I mean, I think, you're talking about moving 700,000 settlers. So, a year.
Oh, the West Bank. Yeah, I can see.
It's pretty efficient. Yeah.
So, but the mm-hmm. but from Gaza, maybe they want to be a little more expedient about it. Well, the motion did go through with a majority of 124 in favor, 14 mm-hmm. Opposed. The usual.
14. Yeah. In the U.S. and a bunch of. Little countries.
Well, Israel, of
many
course.
People have never heard of. Of course, Israel. Yeah, Micronesia. Don't forget Micronesia.
Micronesia is a stalwart.
Vanuatu. Vanuatu. Yeah, all those 10,000 people in Vanuatu, they really are up on Israel politics.
Well, but interestingly, Hungary, and it turns out that Hungary is in the news for mm-hmm. other reasons involved with Israel. Have you followed this? This again going to these exploding pager devices?
Well, yes. And, today, Chris, there has been a whole other wave with hundreds more hospitalized and another dozen or so killed in a whole new wave of explosions of exploding devices, including exploding solar panels, in one case, an exploding iPhone.
I didn't hear that. I've been on the air doing my first. Right. I've been doing my first interview today. I had heard early this morning that these two-way radios had been blowing up, but there's other things blowing up.
That's the next wave. Then, all kinds of stuff is blowing up, including two-way walkie-talkies, and as well as many other random devices with batteries in them, including a whole bunch of solar panels.
Now, the last I had heard was that, and this is from last night, that there had been explosives, small amounts of high explosives put into these pagers was the theory. That doesn't seem to follow that if there's all these other devices going off all of a sudden too. Is there any further clarification on what's causing this?
There's I mean, I've been listening for hours now today to Al Jazeera and BBC, and between all the different people they've had on both of those networks, there's been a lot of speculation without any kind of certainty. I mean, there's been some explosives experts interviewed who have been very confident that the explosions they're looking at least as far as yesterday's pager explosions, that it looks like there was we're talking about devices that were tampered with explosives implanted into them, because they say batteries just can't blow up like that on a timer, that something had to have been planted in there. So if those people who are saying that are correct, then, they might have planted explosives in lots of other devices as well. But if, you know, if the Israelis have figured out some new way of making things blow up, you know, that I wouldn't be personally at all surprised by that. I think, you know, they're very, you know, there's a lot of really cutting edge technology that continues to come out of Israel. And that most, you know, alarmingly until now, the Pegasus surveillance system, which I'm still continually shocked by how many people do not know about this thing, you know, that people think that they're having encrypted communication. You know, I mean, there's no such thing if they know what Pegasus is and does and how it's being employed by governments around the world. You know, this is, yeah, people need to know about this stuff. But
well, and
yeah,
this is software that was inserted into that inserts itself into your telephone or your, you know, your communication handheld mobile. If you get a text or something or a message, and then it insinuates itself mm-hmm. without you knowing, and it monitors everything.
Yeah, and then people in real time can monitor everything that you are doing, saying, hearing, whatever, you know, with your device, you know, the microphone, everything, you know, that what you say, what you type, what people type to say to you, you know, what websites, what everything you're doing on the device.
And this goes too, like for stuff like the Internet of Things, like your refrigerator and your toaster are listening in on you and sending reports to the NSA and to the Israeli intelligence and so on.
I would personally be surprised if that were not already happening. But yeah. But to my knowledge, Pegasus hacks cell phones and laptops and tablets and that sort of thing. You know, I haven't heard of it hacking refrigerators and that kind of stuff. But certainly, you know, the Israelis, the Stuxnet virus that was designed to disable Iran's nuclear centrifuges, that was a very successful, operation that, you know, got a bunch of devices to basically destroy themselves.
When this first happened, mm-hmm. that's what I was thinking, that it was some kind of that. But how do you make a pager, you know, turn its power like up to 12 and then blow up? It just seems kind of weird.
Seems implausible. But yeah, it was actually one of the main plot lines of a near future fiction novel that I still intend to write. But now one of the things has basically been already stolen, you know, as far as like a plot device. You know, I mean, what I had in mind was something somewhat different and bigger in scope than what's just happened, but also very similar.
I'm old enough to remember there was a film back in the 70s, Telephone, with Charles Bronson, where the Russians at that time, those insidious buggers, they were making people's telephones blow up in their ear by sending, you know, super high frequencies down the line or something like that, you know. I mean, it was a Charles Bronson picture, but the plot line was interesting because it meant that anybody that picked up a phone, you know, could be subject. It was kind of like Jaws in the phone wires or something, you know?
Yeah, fantastic. Wow, great. I never heard of this movie. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it didn't make it to the Academy, so I'll just put it that way. But for all of us that use a myriad equipment, especially someone like you, that you're doing all that, you got recording, you're surrounded by technology and everything you do. Does this give you pause to think, oh, maybe I should go acoustic after all?
Well, I mean,
I know that you're pretty acoustic anyway.
Yeah, right. I mean, I have a pickup with a battery in it in my guitar. I mean, there's batteries and pickups and electronic devices and things with Bluetooth and you know, we're just all surrounded by these things. And yeah, and I mean, anybody that thinks that they're not, anybody that thinks that they're able to have a private conversation is just, you know, dreaming. It's just a question of whether you're doing anything that somebody wants to be monitoring and in what way you're being monitored and how your data, your metadata is going to be used and collected. And, you know, I mean, but we're all under constant surveillance these days. So this is the reality.
Well, that seems like small beer to me, though, when you can think, well, anybody that doesn't like what you say can push a button and blow your phone up in your face, you know?
Yeah.
If that's the way it is.
That's the question. Is that where we're at now? Is that the new reality that anybody with this technology can do this kind of thing? I mean, we'll be finding out soon, I hope. But at this point, I think, I mean, of course, part of the whole deal with, you know, making all kinds of random stuff blow up all over the place is to create, you know, an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty and doubt. And, you know, I think they've certainly succeeded in doing that for people in Lebanon, but, you know, also for anybody anywhere else in the world who's watching these events unfold. I think, you know, we're all looking at our devices with batteries in them and wondering, you know, what the hell the future holds.
Yeah, well, you've got up on your site too. You reposted something from Loki, the English rapper and journalist, and this guy is amazing. For anybody who doesn't know, Lowkey, you should really check him out, Loki online. And he says, quote, Israel has a history of stuffing telephones with explosives for assassinations, from the killing of Mahmoud Hamshari in Paris in 72 to the killing of Yahya Ayash in Gaza in 96. This operation is the application of that same malicious model on an industrial scale. Industrial is right. Yeah. Before this, it was in Gaza. We were seeing the use of this lavender program to locate people in their houses and stuff and ping them to send missiles like into their living rooms and such.
Yeah, industrial scale application of AI to commit mass murder in Gaza. And now we have industrial scale of tampering with electronic devices or whatever is going on here. We'll find out eventually, you know, to kill, you know, to massive numbers of people. I mean, at the same time, you know, you could, there's people, including, you know, people I know, Chris and Sarah Wilkinson, and off the streets of her little town in England where she lives, was violently arrested by 16 balaclava clad, possibly Mossad agents or whoever they were on, you know, and held for hours and questioned and not allowed to have medication and really treated with brutality in much the same way as the guy in Baltimore who died in the back of the police van, Freddie Gray, was it? And this,
yeah,
and,
that sounds,
you know,
right.
She was
treated bounced the same around.
Way.
They drove him around in a way that I'm sure they'd done many, many times to many guys, yeah. But just bouncing them around in the back like a pea in a can. But
I think he had been beaten before that, right? So he was already in a compromised physical state, and he was handcuffed in there. And she was as well, handcuffed with no seat belt, you know, in this wagon. She's 61 years old. And, you know, and they're driving around taking sharp corners so that she'll fall. And she fell many times in the back of there, you know. And I mean, this is but what was I going to say about that now, that her abduction and this? I don't remember. Lost my train of thought.
Okay, hang on a second. Then let me cut in for a second. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with David Rovics. David suffers from the same thing I do, which is getting kind of on in years and not remembering what he's trying to say. But when he does remember, he's a singer, songwriter, he's an essayist, he's an anarchist. His website is davidrovics.com. Go there, and it's just, you're so prolific. I'm not surprised that you can't put two thoughts together sometimes, David. But tell us who.
It's ADHD, I mean, in my case. It's not a late stage thing. Yeah.
Many airplane flights. You know, those airplanes are really not good for you in any sense. Mm-hmm. I like the way though that you say whatever's happening next, I aim to be singing about it, because that's kind of the way I feel. It's just like Jesus Christ, what next? You know, there's that old what is it in the Bible or something? The thing like, oh, you're the prophecy of the machines all turning against the people and the end times and all of this. I mean, Jesus, you know, it seems like this really is getting that way. Now, Sarah, maybe tell us who Sarah is. First, I know who she is, but a lot of people might not know why she was the target, of the British Israeli Five Eyes Anglo-American Alliance attention that she got.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I was mentioning her just in relation to the other songs I wrote recently, and I can't remember, but you know, they have this. In Britain, they have in 2000, they have their terrorism act. They have a lot of terrorism acts in Britain, but they're one from 2000, Section 12 of the terrorism act. Oh, now I remember Section 12 of the 2000 terrorism act in England says that if you basically say anything that can be interpreted as praise of a proscribed organization or actions taken by a proscribed organization, then you are guilty of support of that organization and liable for a potential 14-year prison sentence. And so what Sarah Wilkinson is guilty of having done, as far as we know, because they don't say, is having tweeted on October 7th last year, something along the lines of, that was a really impressive event or something. Like, I think the word she actually used was impressive, you know, which is, and the reason I was thinking of it at the time that I lost my train of thought was this event that what the Israelis have just done, making all these, you know, battery devices blow up, was a very impressive accomplishment. You know, horrific mass murder, you know, and mass, you know, causing mass injuries to so many people just for the crime of owning a pager.
Or being in proximity with somebody that has one of these devices.
Yeah. Exactly. Crazy.
Yeah, well, and I've seen lots of people have come out on a certain, you know, with a certain political notion and have said just that, like, wow, this is genius. And some of them are laughing, like this is, it's funny. It's FAFO, you know, it's like what they, one of the terms that people are getting what they deserve.
Well, I mean, then you're maybe praising it, you know, and then, you know, which is, I think, at least as far as like, you know, my viewpoint and thankfully also the viewpoint of my own terrible messed up country's constitution is that we should be allowed to say these things. You know, I mean, that one of the few decent things to come out of, you know, the U.S. government over the past, you know, 250 years was the first 10 amendments to the Bill of to the Constitution and, the, you know, the Bill of Rights, particularly the first one. You know, but they don't have free speech in a lot of countries. I mean, we don't really have it here either. But, you know, it's always been contested, but at least it exists on the books. Whereas, you know, in England, you know, a country with no real free speech laws that are so clear, you know, there's a lot of impediments to free speech. And so in this case, you know, you say something that's looked at as praise of a terrorist group and, you know, just for speaking, you could go to prison for 14 years. I mean, there are actually laws like that in the U.S. too, that you can break all sorts of laws by speaking and going to prison for 25 years. The law that they threatened imprisonment with the Rod Coronado with is like that. It's eco-terrorism laws. You know, there's all sorts of speech crimes you can break laws here. But yeah, this act is... it's very easy to break this law. All you have to do is say something that's interpreted as praise. And why would you not praise the resistance to a genocide? Why would people not praise groups like Ansar Allah and Hamas and Hezbollah for fighting against a genocide? You know?
Wait, you're starting all. To get into sort of crazy territory here. And I got to remind you, I'm in Canada, and in Canada, we don't have the guarantee of being able to speak our mind, however tremulous that guarantee is. And there is a similar legislation, like, of course, Richard Medhurst, the journalist that was harassed and charged at the at Heathrow, I think it was Heathrow Airport. He's an English citizen, but he lives abroad and he was coming home for whatever reason. And they put him through the ringer, took all of his devices like they did with American Dan Kovalik, who's been on this show many times. As he was returning to the States, they gave him a similar treatment and took all of his devices and everything because he was coming back from Russia. I don't know if they gave him the same deal that they gave to Scott Ritter, but I mean, it's all sort of, you know, coming around that you better watch what you say, boyo. We've talked too much already, David. I want to get some of your music in quickly. Tour date.
Yeah, I'll be in Victoria and Nanaimo coming up on the 27th and 29th, and davidrovics.com/tour this, all the info.
DavidRovics.com. This is my second pot of coffee, David. I'm starting to leave my seat here. Thanks a lot. It's the 27th in Victoria, 29th in Nanaimo here on the island. Thanks a lot, David, for coming on. Thanks for all you do. Yeah. And I want to also thank my first guests, Sana Shamagutas and Satish Balasundaram, and remind you that their film, Neelan25.com. Check it out. Their upcoming project, that is. Thanks again, David.
Thank you.
Eisenor grew up on the Salish Sea, where her parents raised her in her adopted country. She was born across the ocean in the land of Turkey, and the path that brought her up to that September day took her to Standing Rock and to the Seattle streets, and eventually to Palestine, where she would meet activists from everywhere gathered at the scene, where she'd become number 17. Eisenor had traveled to the little town of Beta on a Friday for the weekly facing down of the snipers that surrounded the protests every week, where nevertheless the people gathered there to speak out against the madness of those who would expand their settlements to take up all of the farmland, together there to protest among the olives green, where she'd become number 17. Eisenor was there, like so many before, who would join the ranks of those who opposed this war against the people of this ancient place, where they spend their whole lives trying not to be erased, where in that one town by itself, since 2021, 16 others have had their lives cut short by a gun, ended by a soldier's bullet, heard but not seen, where she'd become number 17. Eisenor was shot while she was about to pray, along with other people who had gathered there that day, on September 6th, 2024. And since that date, who even knows how many more have been killed for just existing and put in a sniper's sights, for being Palestinian or for thinking they have rights, in the story of the slaughter in Beta Palestine, where she'd become number 17. Eisenor, she stood, and the sniper took aim. He was facing no threats, whatever they claim. He was 200 meters from where she fell, but he looked through his sights and he aimed well. Shot another woman in the head to add one more to all of Beta's dead. Another life ended by the war machine, where she'd become number 17. Eisenor grew up on the Salish Sea.
Escape the narrative. Guerrilla Radio.
Are you curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, feminism, and activism? Tune in to Rabble Radio on CJSF 90.1 FM to hear the latest news and stories that matter to you. Rabble Radio is the flagship podcast of Rabble.ca.
Thank you. Spark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.